MacCast, Monday, June 3rd, 2019. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast, and boy, do we have Macintosh stuff to talk about this week, because it is Worldwide Developer Conference. Actually kicked off today as I record this Monday. I was hoping to actually watch the keynote, even hurried home after work and sat down, got ready with my Apple TV, flipped on the Worldwide Developer Conference app, looked for the video, and lo and behold, it was not there. A lot of you probably experienced this. For some reason, I don't know really what happened, it took Apple a while to get the video up. As a matter of fact, they posted it right before I sat down to record this podcast for you. But I did cull through all of my RSS feeds and my news sources and, of course, tried to get as much information about what went on today at Worldwide Developer Conference for you. I think we have a good rundown, and that's pretty much what we're going to be covering in this episode of the MacCast. So we're going to cover all of the announcements from Worldwide Developer Conference that we know about so far. I'm sure there'll be more as the weeks go on. Well, more details is usually what we get, but we have the high-level overview of all the stuff that you're going to want to know about, and it's some pretty good stuff. We actually got hardware at Worldwide Developer Conference. I know we were kind of expecting it, but you never really know till it actually happens. And we got some amazing hardware. I guess amazing if you have the money for it. And that'll make more sense in a moment. You can probably already guess because we're going to be talking about pro systems. And then we'll get into some of the software updates, the new versions of the OSs, all the way from Mac OS through iOS through Watch and tvOS and so on. Also some new hardware that came out last week. I know I kind of had an unplanned week off. You may have noticed that, but I'm back and we're good to go. So we got lots of great stuff to talk about. We're going to get into all the Worldwide Developer Conference stuff. And then also I've got a little feedback for you, a little follow-up on Apple TV channels. Want to talk to you about some of my experiences there and a decision that I made. And then also some listener feedback and questions, some stuff about upgrading old Macs, and a question about shuffling your music. And that's going to round out this episode of the MacCast. So it's going to be a great episode. We're going to dive right in a minute. But before we get to it, I do want to take a quick moment and thank a show sponsor, and that is CashFly. You know, I absolutely love CashFly. Reality is, you wouldn't be listening to this podcast without them. They have been hosting the shows for a while, and what's awesome about them is they deliver them to you quickly and reliably. Never had an issue with putting out the episodes, and that is all due to the quality and the amazing services of CashFly. And they keep websites running, you know, because when websites don't load, people lose interest. As a matter of fact, for every second it takes a page to load, it costs a company about 16% in engagement. So people are leaving if your site isn't loading, and fewer visits means fewer customers. And that's really not good for your business. It's not good for anyone. It's not good for the customer. So that's why CashFly has your back with their new web optimization capabilities. All of your content will be optimized before it's actually delivered to your visitors without requiring any development effort from you. And with the recent addition of CashFly's flexible edge application platform and implementation services, their capabilities reach far beyond those of any traditional CDN. CashFly's web content optimization solution actually includes things like powerful APIs for solving content distribution problems, on-the-fly next-gen image optimization, application load balancing, and smart asset delivery. So listen, if your website is directly tied to your revenue, and you know it is, optimize your site's content. Do it now. Guarantee the best user experience for all your customers, no matter where they are or no matter what device they're using, and do it today. The folks at CashFly are even going to provide you a free optimization consultation. They're going to do that for listeners of this podcast. That's right, just for you. so you can know exactly where your site stands with a Lighthouse score report. You can get that and learn how Cachefly Web Optimization Solutions can help add 60 points instantly to your score by visiting mac.cachefly.com. That's mac.cachefly.com to get that free Lighthouse score report and check out Cachefly's Web Optimization Solutions. mac.cachefly.com, and a big thank you to Cachefly for their support of the MacCast. So let's dive right into the news coming out of Worldwide Developer Conference, and I'm going to kick things off. I don't even know what order they went in, honestly, in the keynote, because I haven't seen it yet. I'm going to watch it right after this. Actually, it's going to be what I'm going to be watching when I'm on my way to bed. But I am going to kick off with what I think is probably the most exciting announcement. Details of the Mac Pro. We know that Apple has been working on a Mac Pro. They've been working on it for years now. It's been, what, 6 years, 8 years? I don't even know at this point. All I know is we need a new Mac Pro, and Apple finally gave us one. So we're not going to bury the lead. We've been waiting on this thing forever, and it is, as you might imagine, a screamer with a massive price tag. No doubt that you can spend more than a car on this device. We're going to be talking about that because some people have crunched the numbers and they're doing some estimating. We don't know what Apple is actually going to sell the fully configured models for, but we do know where the base price starts and we know some of the options, so we can speculate from there. But let's get to some of the details. First and foremost, design the new Mac Pro. Yep, it looks even more like a cheese grater than ever before. The cheese grater Mac is back, and I know it's probably cliche to say that at this point, because if you've been reading any of the news, they're all saying that. Everybody's saying that. But it's true. If you look at the thing, the way the handle is, the way it's designed, I mean, it looks like it came out of a kitchen shop. I'm sorry. You know, I don't know. I'm going to have to see it in person before I pass full judgment. I'm not super excited about the design, but the design is not what we're wanting to get to. There's reasons for the design, and it does have really cool materials and a really cool story behind it. Of course, there's a great Johnny Ive video to go along with all this stuff, so he can tell you all about it, but I'm going to just kind of overview the details for you. Basically, it has what Apple calls a stainless steel space frame with feet. Or you can actually get optional wheels if you want to roll it around your office. But then around that space frame is an aluminum chassis that completely slides off. It's got a little pop-up handle on the top. As a matter of fact, when you lift up the handle, it will shut the power down to your Mac. It'll actually power it down. And you twist it, and then the whole entire chassis just literally slides off the frame. And what's cool about that is it gives you 360 degree access to the internals of the machine. This is what pro users want. They want access to everything so they can perform upgrades, they can do service and all that sort of stuff. And Apple has provided that here again, finally. It has a dual-sided logic board, so you can get all the way around it. On one side, it has the processor, graphics, and expansion. On the other side, you've got your storage and your memory modules. As far as physical dimensions go, it's a beast. It's 21 inches tall, so almost 2 feet tall, right? 24 inches, 2 feet, just under that. So 21 inches tall, 8.5 inches wide, and it weighs almost 40 pounds. Yeah, so you might want those wheels so you don't have to carry it around the office. I don't know. It has a massive cooling architecture, and the reason for that is going to become apparent when we start running through all of the hardware that's in there. But basically, it has a massive heat pipe heat sink for the CPU. Has three massive impeller fans on the back to blow air across the CPUs and the GPUs. It also has a blower unit that actually pulls air across the memory units, the storage, and through the power supply. All of that coming through this lattice pattern that's in the chassis to create the holes. And Apple says there's actually more air in the chassis than there actually is metal, but because of how they've done the lattice pattern and designed it, it's actually an extremely strong structural mechanism. So it's beefy. I don't think it's going to be flimsy at any point. And even, you know, despite the looks, what you might think about it, There is a reason for it. And even with all of that cooling and all those fans, Apple claims that noise-wise, it's not going to be any louder than an iMac Pro. So that is something that pros also want, right? They don't want a bunch of fans blowing hard and making a lot of noise when you're working on your video projects, right? And Apple says this machine's not going to have it. It's going to remain incredibly cool, which is good for the processor and good for the performance, right? No thermal throttling here. You don't want that. So Apple's going to keep this thing nice and cool. As far as what the processors are, Apple is using Intel Xeon W processors with up to 28 cores and 64 PCI Express lanes. So these are not slouches. You've got six memory channels in there with 2933 megahertz ECC RAM, 12 slots that support memory slots, that is, that support up to 1.5 terabytes of memory, depending upon your configuration. 1.5 terabytes of memory. I don't even know who can use all that memory. I'm sure there's people out there that can. That is unbelievable. As far as expansion goes, you've got eight PCIe slots. So, yep, we've got PCIe slots back in a Mac Pro. You've got four double-wide slots, three single-wide slots, and then a half-length slot. But that one is actually already filled with Apple's default I/O card. And as far as the input-output on the Mac Pro, you've got two Thunderbolt 3 ports, two USB-A ports, two 10-gigabit Ethernet ports, and then that's on the back in that little Apple I/O card. And then on the top, you have a 3.5 millimeter headphone jack and two more Thunderbolt 3 ports. So a total of four Thunderbolt 3 ports on the new Mac Pro and all of that internal expansion. So you should have plenty of connectivity with this new machine. As far as the graphics go, Apple actually designed a new graphics module, something they're calling the Mac Pro Expansion Module, or the XPX, or MPX, rather, for short. Sorry about that, the MPX. It has a standard PCI Express connector and then a new PCIe connector that integrates Thunderbolt, and Apple says that's for increased capability. As far as your graphics options in the new Mac Pro, you actually have three different options. There is a Radeon Pro 580X MPX module, a Radeon Pro Vega 2 module, or a Radeon Pro Vega 2 Duo module. So that means you can support up to four GPUs. Yep, four GPUs in the new Mac Pro. The thing is screaming, like I said before. It supports up to 4 terabytes of SSD storage and has the T2 secure enclave for increased security. And then Apple went out and decided, you know, that's not enough. We need to accelerate this thing even more. They created their own PCIe card, something they're calling the Afterburner Hardware Accelerator for video. This allows it to process up to 6.3 billion pixels per second, and it's capable of handling up to 3 streams of 8K ProRes RAW video or 12 streams of 4K ProRes RAW. So you throw this card in there, you are going to be burning through video or after burning through video like you wouldn't believe. Of course, I'm sure there's going to be a price for all of this performance. What that total cost is, we don't really know, but we do know that the base configuration comes with an 8-core processor, 32 gigabytes of RAM, a Radeon Pro 580X module, and unfortunately, a measly, and I'm going to say measly, I'm just going to come out and say it, 256 gigabytes of SSD storage. I think that is a crime to put in a Mac Pro base model. I think 1 terabyte should be the bare minimum for a Pro machine. But that said, in that 256 gigabyte configuration for the SSD with all those other features, the price is starting at $6,000 US. And yes, it's only going up from there. And there is going to be a rack optimized version. So if you want to throw it in a rack, you have that. Now, getting to the speculation on what a maxed out new Mac Pro might run you. The Verge did some calculations. They looked at current market pricing of a number of the upgrade options, like the 128 gigabyte DDR4 ECC RAM modules. 12 of those, you can imagine they're going to be pricey, about $1,000 a piece. So over $12,000 just in RAM. You've got those 2 terabyte SSD upgrades, and we know Apple doesn't give you discount pricing on their SSDs. And then the 28 core Intel Xeon W processor, just that processor unit, $7,500 US. Yep, you're at $7,500 just for the CPU. Add in those graphics cards and a bunch of other things, and the top-end configured Mac Pro will likely go, you ready for this, for between $35,000 to $45,000. And that's before you add on a new Pro Display XDR with a stand, which we're going to talk about here in a second. So, your new Mac Pro, you can have a new Mac Pro, or you can have a Tesla Model 3. You decide. I guess if you're that rich, you can probably have both. So there you go. It's a little bit crazy. But even that base configuration at $6,000, minus the fact that it doesn't have enough storage, that is a screaming machine. And we can expect some amazing performance benchmarks to follow when these machines come out and become available, which is going to be sometime this fall. Apple did not give us an exact date, but that's when we are expecting them. And of course, you can't have a new Mac Pro without a new Apple Pro display. That was another thing that Apple promised us. And once again, they did deliver. They have the Pro Display XDR, not just an HDR display. Apple had to go to the extreme and call it the XDR because it will do high dynamic range in an incredible fashion. It is a 32-inch Retina 6K display with a resolution of 6,016 by 3,384 pixels. That is a whopping 20.4 million pixels at a resolution, a Retina resolution of 218 pixels per inch. So display density, 218 pixels per inch, which is quite high for that large of a display. 16:9 aspect ratio includes support for P3 wide color gamut, 10-bit color. It will produce over 1 billion colors. It is super bright. Apple says it will do a sustained 1,000 nits with 1,600 nits of peak brightness. That sustained nit brightness is unheard of in a monitor. It has a 1 million to 1 contrast ratio. Is that something we can even see with our eyes? I don't even know. That is unbelievable. As far as expansion and ports, it has one Thunderbolt 3 port and 3 USB-C ports. It offers a standard anti-reflective coating, but if you prefer a matte finish, they have that for you as well. But oh no, Apple didn't just do that with a coating. They actually nano-etched the glass to give you that matte finish. And of course, you're going to pay for the privilege, $1,000. Added on to the base price if you want to get that etched glass finish, the matte finish. The design, just like the Mac Pro itself, does have the same aluminum lattice pattern on the back to aid in cooling and also just to make it look really pretty next to that new Mac Pro. And there is an amazing new aluminum stand for it that has this really unique magnetic mounting bracket. It lines up and it kind of clicks in, and then there's actually a mechanism that clamps on, so it's not just the magnet. I was a little bit worried, like 32-inch display just being held up by a magnet, that would make me nervous. But it's not just a magnet system. There is an unlatching sort of mechanism that goes along with it. The display supports height and tilt adjustments, something that displays from Apple in the past it didn't support. We only ever had tilt. We didn't get the up and down height adjustments. And this one also allows you to rotate it for landscape or portrait use. It is pretty amazing. Here's the thing. The stand doesn't come included with the monitor. It is an add-on, and it will set you back another $999 US. If you'd prefer to VESA mount it, there is a VESA mounting adapter that is $199, so you can go a little bit cheaper there. And as far as the display itself, yep, that's going to set you back $4,999 US. Again, add $1,000 for the nano etched glass matte finish, $1,000 for the stand if you want that. And there you go, you're at $7,000 on your display. So if you want to max everything out, add that to the $35,000 to $45,000 for your Mac Pro, and you can easily be into the $50,000 range for your new Mac Pro setup. Obviously, that means this system is not for most of us, right? This is targeted at the high-end business professional, large companies. You're talking render farms. You're talking people who are doing super, super high-end work. Of course, you'll be able to configure the thing out a little less expensive if you're more in the just pro range, not the extreme pro range, but Apple's kind of got every base covered. So I think this is an amazing machine. I think Apple is going to sell them into the market that they're looking to sell them into. For the rest of us, we have iMac Pros, we have Mac Minis that come in some amazing configurations now. So there are plenty of options across the board. Of course, you're going to be hearing probably a lot of people complaining and laughing and pointing at this price point as something that's completely ridiculous. But Apple knows the market that this thing is for, and they went after it hardcore, and I think they did not disappoint. I'm looking forward to talking to more Mac Pros. If there are Mac Pros out there that are considering these system, you know, this system, I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to know what you think about it. Is the pricing crazy? Is it totally just out there? Or is this what we have been clamoring for? I think it ultimately is. I think all the options and configurations, you can kind of really build the system that meets your pro price point and meets the features and functionality that you need. And you can spend, you know, into the clouds, obviously, if that's where you want to go. And there definitely will be some companies, some organizations that go there because they need this kind of raw computing performance. And I can't wait to see the benchmarks on this thing. It's all very exciting. Some great announcements on hardware coming out of Worldwide Developer Conference. Of course, that wasn't the only thing that Apple discussed, although it does feel a little bit like the software took a back seat to a certain degree, especially Mac OS. Don't have a lot of information about the next version of Mac OS. Mac OS Catalina, that is the official name, so we know what name Apple went with. As far as what's happening, well, it's going to be the first version of Mac OS that will remove support for 32-bit apps. So, yep, say goodbye. If you're still using Office 2011, you're probably going to have to move on from that, especially if you want to upgrade it to Mac OS Catalina in the fall. It's also going to be the first version of Mac OS to break up the iTunes dominance. Yep, no more iTunes. Well, iTunes is actually being split into three individual apps. We've been seeing this coming for a long time. I'm actually, frankly, glad to see it happen. Apple Music, podcasts, and TV will all be their own apps in Mac OS Catalina. As far as how you will sync your iOS devices, if you're wondering about that, they're actually moving that into the Finder. So when you connect your device, it will show up in the Finder in the sidebar there. You'll select it just like you did previously in iTunes, and you'll get your same familiar iTunes interface for doing your syncing. And I think that makes a lot of sense. Actually makes a lot more sense than having the syncing built into the app like iTunes. I think it's going to work a lot better. And those are kind of the major new features that we know about in macOS Catalina. I'm sure there's some more. I'll be digging into them as the information becomes available, and we'll share that on future episodes of the MacCast. But that's what I have for you right now. As far as which Macs will run macOS Catalina, Apple is saying it will run on Macs or MacBook Pros from about 2012 or later, and MacBooks from 2015 or later. So if you have a model of Mac that is older than that, you're going to be stuck on a older version of the operating system. And again, macOS Catalina will be available sometime in the fall. Moving on, we did get a lot more information about iOS 13, the next version of iOS, and also what's going to be happening on iPads with iOS. And that was probably one of the more interesting bits of news. iOS for iPad is actually going to be separated out from iOS 13 and rebranded as iPad OS. So Apple did a big focus on the iPad. It has been optimized. iPad OS has been optimized for the iPad's larger screen. It brings some amazing new features. It has a more dense icon layout, which means that you can have more app icons per screen, actually up to 30, something that people have brought up in the past. You know, why are those app icons so spread out? I could fit a lot more. Well, Apple heard us and decided that we can get up to 30 per screen now, which is great. It is getting a new dark mode. So if that's your preference, you'll be able to put it into dark mode as well. With that new home screen, you're going to have the ability to add and dock Today widgets right on your home screen. So you can slide them out and permanently put them on the home screen next to your app icons. And that's actually not going to remove the number of icons. You can actually still fit all of your icons in there along with the widgets. So that's pretty cool. They have updated and improved the split view windows. You can now have multiple split view windows per application. And when you tap on the app icon in the dock, it will display all of its open split view spaces. You can also have multiple split view spaces open with the same app. So no more of this problem where, hey, if I dock Slack and Safari next to each other, and then I want to have Safari and Notes next to each other, Safari doesn't get shut down in one place and then reopened in the other. You can actually have multiple instances of Safari along with other apps. You can have multiple instances of the same app. So you can have two Safari windows side by side or two Notes windows side by side. You can mix and match as you want, and you can quickly switch between all of those different spaces by tapping the app icon. So a lot more functionality there. You've still got drag and drop across those spaces, all that sort of stuff. It's going to become much more desktop-like, for lack of a better word, and I think it's a good direction for Apple to be moving in. Probably the biggest news that most people are going to be excited about with iPadOS, support for external drives and local network volumes, which is cool, but external volumes, finally, yes, inside the Files app, we can connect external drives, flash drives, SD cards, thumb drives. You can connect it all and access it directly from iPadOS. And the Files app is getting a new column view, very similar to macOS, so some new ways to browse through your files. iCloud Drive is now getting support for sharing entire folders, not just sharing files. So if you're an iCloud Drive user, you can have more Dropbox-like functionality. For camera files, you'll be able to go in as you're browsing through those and launch into third-party image editors like Photoshop or Lightroom quickly and easily. Another great thing in the Files app, it's going to support zipping and unzipping files, so compressing and uncompressing files right inside the Files app. And Apple is moving the document scanner, or including a document scanner, I guess I should say, in the Files app as well. So it's not going to be just relegated to the Notes application anymore. You'll be able to document scan files right into the Files app. So a lot of great improvements on iPadOS there. Apple is also doing some updates for Safari. It's getting some new keyboard shortcuts as well as a download manager. And Apple says that by default, Safari on iPad will now load the desktop version of a site rather than the mobile version, which is how it should have been from the very beginning. So that's great news there. Apple is also adding support for fonts in iPadOS and font libraries that you'll be able to download and install from the App Store. They're adding some new gestures, some new three-finger gestures for the cut, copy, and paste operations. There's a new compact version of the keyboard that you can actually scale down and move around, along with a new swipe gesture typing system, so you'll be able to use it with one hand. That is also available on iOS for the iPhone as well. There's new improved cursor selections and movement, so you can tap and drag the insertion bar around your text. You can tap and drag to select text, so no more having to deal with those double handles and all that zooming in and out and stuff like that. And something I'm excited about is they're finally adding support to triple tap to select a sentence and quad tap or quadruple tap to select an entire paragraph. And something we had heard rumored going into Worldwide Developer Conference was that Apple might add mouse input support for iPads. It actually is in there, but as expected, it is an accessibility option. So you will be able to connect a USB mouse and turn on an accessibility option that will allow you to use that mouse to move a little dot cursor around your iPad and to be able to click on things. I didn't see a demo of whether or not it has some option key functions for doing two-finger or three-finger gestures, but I would imagine that functionality might be in there as well. On iPadOS, Apple also did improve Apple Pencil support. They say they're going to make it faster, with the latency being reduced from 20 milliseconds all the way down to 9 milliseconds. I mean, iPad Pencil or Apple Pencil is already really fast, so I can't even imagine it getting better with a just a software update. They're also going to support markup being used system-wide, and there is a new tool palette that you can actually shrink down and move anywhere, and Apple is going to include something called Pencil Kit, an API for third-party apps to be able to take advantage of some of the new Apple Pencil features. Another thing that we had heard rumored about that a lot of people are going to be very excited about, it seems like a small thing, but it's kind of a big deal, a new heads-up display for the volume indicator. So when you're using the volume buttons on your iPad, it's no longer going, or your iPhone, it's no longer going to block the entire display with that big ugly volume icon. What happens now is it simply pops out near the volume buttons when you're in portrait mode, or in the center of the screen when you're in landscape mode. And there is a large volume button at first, but then it shrinks down to just a tiny little line on the side. And what's really cool is once you activate it with the button, you can also drag the slider with your finger, just like you would in the control center, to control the volume. So that's some of the new iOS features specifically related to, a lot of them specifically related to iPadOS. Of course, iOS on iPhone is also going to get a number of those new features, including the new dark mode. Apple also announced something they're calling Sign In with Apple. I was going to call it Apple Sign In, but it's actually Sign In with Apple. This is a new single sign-on system for apps that will allow you to use your Apple ID to create your account and to sign in. And as you might imagine, it is focused on protecting your privacy. Apps can only ask for your email address and your name. They have to kind of display the information they're asking for, and you'll have little checkboxes to choose where you get to choose what you want to share with those. You can also choose, if you don't want to share your email address, you can choose to have Apple generate a random email address for you, and then that will be linked to your account privately, and any messages would be automatically forwarded to your real email address in iCloud without exposing that to the third-party application or service. And there is some news saying that Apple might be changing some of the rules for third-party apps, saying that they have to use sign-in or provide offer, rather. They have to offer sign-in with Apple if they offer any other third-party sign-in option like Facebook sign-in or Google sign-in. So if the app has that, there's a rumor floating around that Apple will require them to also offer sign-in with Apple. So you'll have the choice to go with maybe the option that gives you a little bit more privacy over your data. So that's always a good thing, getting a little bit more privacy. A few other features of note in iOS: larger downloads over cellular. Yes, finally, Apple recognizing that cellular plans are getting better and more of us have access to more data, and maybe there's occasions when we might want to download a large app over cellular, so that's coming. They didn't really say what the new limits were, so hopefully we'll get some details on that pretty soon. Dolby Atmos support for audio playback, a new feature to help protect you from robocalls and all those annoying calls we're getting on our cell phones now. It's called Silence Unknown Callers. And if you turn this on, it's going to use Siri intelligence, the thing that goes through your contacts and phone numbers it might find in mail and all those sorts of things. And it will use that to start filtering inbound numbers. So if it's a number that is recognized by Siri intelligence, it will come through normally, but anything that isn't, so if the numbers aren't in your contacts, those will go straight to voicemail, so you don't have to be bothered by them. Your phone won't ring. And again, this is a feature that you'll be able to enable. I'm pretty excited about it. It sounds pretty great because pretty much anybody that I normally want to get a phone call from, they're in my contacts, and that, I think, is a great way to filter out some of those unknown callers. So I'll be looking forward to that feature. Another nice feature is folder management and notes, and also conversational Siri shortcuts. So I'm assuming that means you'll be able to set up Siri shortcuts where you can have one Siri command kind of lead into the other. So that's a feature I'm looking forward to getting more details on and learning a little bit more about. iOS 13 will be available as a free software update for the iPad Air 2 or later. All iPad Pro devices, the fifth generation iPad and later, and the iPad Mini 4 and later. So if you have any of those models, you will be able to run the next version of iOS. A few other operating systems to talk about. We've got watchOS 6 on the way. That is bringing a couple of new features, including a number of new watch faces: California Dial, Modular Compact, Gradient, and an updated version of the Solar Face, which has features similar to the Infograph Modular Face. There's also a couple of new complications, including noise and wind. I believe noise is like a noise generator that will be available on the watch. Also, new apps, including an audiobooks app. So if you enjoy audiobooks, you'll be able to sync those over to your Apple Watch and listen to those. A calculator and voice memos. So a couple of new, nice new additions for watch apps. There are also some new health features, including trends, which allows you to see how your fitness activity compares over time. And you'll also be able to get views of your fitness highlights and some of your favorites. And there also is a new cycles feature that will allow you to track your menstrual cycles. And finally, Taptic Chimes is going to be available as a new option for alerts. I'm assuming this means you'll be able to get little Taptic pulses as a chimed alert instead of an audio alert, which is pretty cool. And all of the updates for watchOS are going to be available in the fall, and watchOS 6 will run on all Series 1 or newer Apple Watches. So basically anything other than the original Series 0 Apple Watch will be able to run watchOS 6. There's also a new update for tvOS, tvOS 13, and the big new feature here, yes, something we've been, again, waiting on for forever, multi-user support. And guess what? It's not the only device to get it. There is one other device that we haven't talked about. You can probably guess what it is that will get multi-user support. But on tvOS, it means that different members of your household can now get their own personalized suggestions and up next lists in the TV app. Music will also be personalized, and you can display lyrics that are in sync with the music in the little music player. There's a new control center style interface that you can pull out, and that's what's going to let you switch quickly and easily between the various users on tvOS. In the main TV interface, the little dock, those are the kind of four icons along the top. Those are now able to play full screen video previews on the home screen, which is a cool feature. Personally, I don't like my apps auto playing full screen video because I don't necessarily always want to see what they have to offer, especially like if it's a Netflix preview or something like that. So I'm hoping that is something that is controllable. I don't think it is in the current TV app. You know, Apple made that enhancement when you're kind of pulling in movies or looking at movies, it auto plays the trailers. And again, not my favorite feature. Let's hope that is user controllable. Apple also gearing up and getting ready for the release of Apple Arcade, which is coming in the fall, by adding support with tvOS 13 for Xbox One and PlayStation 4 controllers. So you'll be able to use those wireless controllers with your Apple TV and presumably with Apple Arcade games. And then finally, there are some new underwater HDR screensavers that were created by Apple in partnership with BBC Natural History. Apple is going to be releasing TV Plus also this fall, along with Apple Arcade. And one of the other things that they did show off that I am looking forward to seeing once I get to see that Worldwide Developer Conference video is a preview of an actual Apple TV Plus show, For All Mankind, which is from Battlestar Galactica creator Ronald D. Moore. This is a series that looks at the 1960s space race from the perspective of the Soviet Union actually beating the U.S. to the moon landing, and the whole show centers around that. So I'm looking forward to getting a little glimpse at that. And like I said, that is in the Worldwide Developer Conference video. So something that Apple did not show off at the Apple TV Plus event was a lot of the new shows that they've been producing. So this is kind of our first look at that. So I'm excited to see that. And I'd be excited to get your opinions about that or any of the other iOS announcements or tvOS, I guess, what do we call these, device OS announcements that Apple made at Worldwide Developer Conference. Of course, there is one other software update that would come along with this, and that is for those of us who have HomePods. Yes, there's going to be a couple new features there, including multi-user support. Yep, the HomePod is the other device getting multi-user support, and it gets it in a really cool way because the HomePod will actually recognize voices and then adapt the requests for that person. So your music, your messages, your calendars, and more, Apple's going to be able to recognize, hey, that's you talking, and you'll be able to get your personalized stuff from your HomePod. HomePod is also getting support for over 100,000 live terrestrial radio stations through support for iHeartRadio, TuneIn, and radio.com. And another cool feature, this is a HomeKit feature, so somewhat related to HomePod. HomeKit is going to gain the ability to securely store security camera video in iCloud. And what's cool about that is it's going to be encrypted locally before it gets sent up to Apple's servers. And they're going to allow you to store a 10-day window of video recording from your HomeKit security cameras. And those recordings don't count against your iCloud storage. And that option is going to be made available with the 200 gigabyte or 2 terabyte plans from Apple. And if you have a 200 gigabyte plan, you'll be able to use a single camera and store your video in the cloud. Or if you have the 2 terabyte plan, you can get support for up to 5 video cameras. So Apple's calling it free with an iCloud storage plan. you have to have a 200 gigabyte or a 2 terabyte plan to be able to support that feature. But cameras from Logitech, Eufy, and Netatmo will support the new feature at launch. And that kind of rounds out all of the Worldwide Developer Conference announcements, at least what I know at this point. Of course, we'll be following up on future episodes of the MacCast with more information and details as it becomes available. I would love to hear your thoughts and opinions on all of this, so send your emails and audio comments to maccast@gmail.com. Now, I did kind of take a week off, so there was one big hardware announcement that we did skip here on the MacCast, so I figure we cover that here before we move on to our user questions and feedback. The new iPod Touch. Apple actually updated the iPod Touch last week. The key features are a new updated A10 Fusion chip, along with a 256 gigabyte storage option. The 7th generation iPod Touch actually has the same physical design as the 6th generation model. It's still rocking that 4-inch Retina display and a home button. It also means that you get to keep the 3.5mm headphone jack along with the lightning connector, and it has a single speaker and mic. It's also still available in the same colors, space gray, silver, gold, blue, gold, pink, and product red. Unfortunately, the cameras did not get an update, so those are the same. You have the same 8-megapixel camera on the rear and 1.2-megapixel front-facing camera, so not the most, you know, up-to-date cameras in the world, but there's still some pretty nice cameras. Battery life also remains the same at 40 hours of music playback and 8 hours of video playback. Unfortunately, they did not add support for Apple Watch with this iPod Touch. You still can't use an iPod Touch with an Apple Watch. You are going to need an iPhone for that, and that's mainly because the Apple Watch app isn't available for the iPod Touch. Pricing is $199, $299, and $399 US, respectively, for 32 gigabytes, 128 gigabytes, and 256 gigabytes of storage, and the new iPod Touch is available now. And with that, that is going to do it for the news for this week. Before we move on, I do want to take a moment and thank another show sponsor, and that is Linode. Hey, look, if you're looking for hosting, Linode is a great option. They allow you to instantly deploy and manage an SSD server in their Linode cloud. You can get a server up and running literally in seconds, and you get your choice of Linux distributions, resources, and your choice of 10 different node locations. So you get to pick where your server is and how you want it fully configured. And best of all, they're giving MacCast customers a $20 credit. If you've been wanting to build out a server for whatever use, maybe you want a VPN, maybe you want to host your website, you want to do WordPress, you want to do Drupal, GitLab, OpenVPN, they've got one-click installs for all of that. If you want to run a gaming server, Minecraft, Ark, Terraria, they have one-click installs for that. They make it super easy. Their management panel, absolutely a breeze to use. I was able to get a Minecraft server up and running in literally minutes. It was amazing. And plus, they offer a whole bunch of distributions. If it runs Linux, basically, it will run on Linode. Most distributions are available out of the box, but you can also custom upload images and even create your own. Basically, you get to build whatever server you want. And best of all, you only pay for what you use with Linode. So they have all kinds of configurations and options. Their pricing and setup is simple. No surprise fees. You get hourly billing across all of their plans, and they have additional add-on services like backup. If you need load balancing, if you need larger storage volumes, all of those things are available to you. They all feature fast native SSD storage. They offer a 40 gigabit network and industry-leading processors. You can pick from 10 locations worldwide for their data centers, and they just opened a new one in Toronto, Canada. It's built with the most up-to-date hardware and their next-generation network backbone. It allows users to comply with in-country data protection requirements while taking advantage of all of Linode's technologies and tools. And they're adding an additional data center opening in Mumbai, India, by the end of 2019. Like I said earlier, the dashboard makes it easy to manage your Linodes, see what's going on with your plan, and they offer 24/7 live customer support. They have a great documentation library, which provides a lot of great resources for setting up, putting together your security, your firewalls, all that sort of stuff that you need to do. I actually had to jump in there when I was setting up my server, and it's some great documentation. So if you want to check it out, visit linode.com/mattcast to set up your first Linode and to get a $20 credit. To get that credit, use the promo code MACCAST2019. That's linode.com/mattcast, and be sure to use the promo code MACCAST2019 for a $20 credit toward your first Linode. And a big thank you to Linode for their support of the MacCast. I want to give you a little follow-up on Apple TV channels. We talked about these on the MacCast when Apple rolled them out in the new Apple TV app. This is Apple's feature where you can get some premium services like HBO or Showtime right within the Apple TV app, and you don't need a third-party app. So you don't need the HBO Now app or any other app. You just sign up inside the Apple TV, and then you get to use the Apple TV interface to access all of the content for that service. And I have to tell you, I really tried to use it and like it, but the poor user experience and some of the limitations have made me decide that, nope, I'm going back to the old way. I'm going to go back and use the HBO Now app. I'm going to use that service. There's actually no discount. Like, I don't get HBO for cheaper by subscribing through, you know, to the Apple TV channel. And there's actually, turns out, some limitations. I need to make a correction on something that I thought I understood on the last episode of the MacCast or on a previous episode of the MacCast, but I don't. So hopefully nobody else got caught in this trap. But basically, you know, when it comes to the user interface, the channel user interface, it's just too hard to navigate, especially when you're trying to browse the content. It's hard to get down to. It's like way in a weird area of the app. You've got to scroll, you know, pretty far down to get to where the channels even are. And then once you get into the channel, it's got the standard sort of Apple interface, and you have to scroll down far if you want to start browsing through the different content, and it's just really not a great user experience. And because there's that, and then Apple also, can we just talk about the new TV app experience in general? I used to love the TV app. We talked about this a little bit on the iOS show. I was an absolute fan of the TV app. I thought it was the best way to experience content on the Apple TV, on my iOS devices. The Up Next list was awesome. It was always filtering in great content. I could keep track of all the things I was watching and the different applications that it supported. It was great. Now, the new TV app, it's constantly trying to upsell me on content that I don't have access to. So it's showing me things and recommending things from apps where I need to have a cable subscription. I need to have, a paid subscription to some other service that I don't own. And it's surfacing all that stuff. And it's basically pushing out the content that I want to watch. So there's that. Along with the new channel interface, I am just overall not that happy anymore with the TV app. I don't know how you feel about it, or if you've noticed this. I'm finding it actually really frustrating. I wish there was actually an option to go in and tell it, hey, I don't want to see anything other than the services that I either have a subscription to or the apps that integrate with the apps that I have installed on my device. I don't want to know about what's in CBS All Access because I don't have that. I'm not interested in buying it. Don't try to upsell me on it. I don't want to know what's in Showtime. I don't have that. I don't want to subscribe to that. It's really, really annoying. So unfortunately, I'm finding myself now moving away from the TV app, which I had gotten totally sucked into, and just going back to the standalone apps. And I kind of feel that way with the channels, too. It's kind of a really big bummer because I thought the TV app was awesome, and I'm really sad to see the direction Apple's moving in. But getting back to the HBO thing and my sort of mea culpa where I was wrong about HBO, I thought that after I subscribed to HBO for Apple TV that I still had access through that account to the HBO Now app, because I completely deleted the HBO Now app on my device. I unsubscribed from HBO Now and then signed up for my Apple TV, HBO on Apple TV subscription. After signing up for that, I reinstalled the HBO Now app, and immediately the first time it started up, it said, "Hey, do you want to activate this through your service?" And I said, "Sure, I want to activate it through iTunes." And then it walked me through the process of signing up for an HBO Now account, which I already had an HBO Now account, and it attached it to my Apple ID email address. My other account was actually linked through my Gmail address, so I thought they were two separate accounts. Well, apparently, even though I canceled the HBO Now, it was still linking that account back to my Apple ID, and that was still active for the remainder of my subscription date. So I thought I was logging in to HBO Now with my new HBO for Apple TV subscription. Nope, I was really still using my existing HBO Now subscription, even though it was linked to a second email address. So it all got really weird. And so I started to do a little more digging, and it turns out that the HBO channel, if you have the HBO channel through Apple TV, so HBO for Apple TV subscription, you can only use that from the TV app. So basically, you're relegated to just being able to use Apple devices, and I think that sucks. I guess the exception would be if you have a Roku or a Fire TV, which now support the Apple TV app, you could access things there. Or if you have a new smart TV that supports the Apple TV app, like a Samsung or a Vizio, you could access the content there. But if you have an Android device, or if you have a PC, or you want to use a web browser or someone else's machine to log into your HBO account and watch your HBO content, you'd be out of luck if you had an HBO for Apple TV subscription through the HBO channel. Totally inflexible. I don't know why HBO and Apple set it up that way. It doesn't make any sense. Again, especially considering that you pay the same price, $14.99 a month. I can sign up for HBO Now. I can still link it through my iTunes account in terms of the subscription. So you can sign up with your iTunes account and link that in, pay the same price. So I honestly, with the poor user experience of the channel, I don't see the advantage of having the channel. Maybe I'm missing something. I'm happy to be wrong on this. If you disagree with me, if you think I'm off base, shoot me some feedback. Send me an email, maccast@gmail.com. But for now, for me, I've moved back to HBO Now. It still integrates with the TV app. I still get it in my Up Next and Now Playing. I really just don't see the advantage of using the channel. It feels like it has more limitations for the same price. But that's my two cents. Let me know what you think. I'm assuming there's many of us out there who have an older Mac. Maybe it's starting to show signs of its age, but we maybe don't have the budget for a new Mac Pro, you know, a $5,000 computer. Or maybe we don't even have the budget for a new iMac Pro or an iMac or a Mac Mini or anything like that. And we maybe want to get a little bit more longevity out of our existing Mac. And we've brought this topic up on the show in the past, but I always love to hear from listeners who've gone through the process and had the same experience that I've had. So here's a comment I received from Paul this week talking about speeding up an aging Mac.
Hi, Adam. It's Paul Adkins here from the UK. I just thought I'd call and tell you something that I did a few months ago, actually, with my elderly iMac, which is 2011, 1 terabyte with a spinning hard drive. It was getting pretty slow, and the spinning beach ball was happening more often than I wanted it to. And in spite of all my efforts to speed things up by cleaning out and reinstalling software, etc., it really wasn't going to get much better. So I decided that it would be worth having a go at upgrading it myself by replacing the spinning hard drive with an SSD. So I did a bit of research and first of all purchased a 2.5-inch SSD, 1 terabyte, which was the most expensive part of the project, and I think that cost about £300. In addition to that, I just needed an adapter cradle to bring it up to the same size as the original 3.5-inch drive, and a thermal sensor cable from OWC, and I did manage to source one of those in the UK, so that wasn't too bad. After that, I followed the guide on the iFixit.com website, and it was very straightforward, I have to say. It probably took me an hour to get it all done. And then obviously there was the making a clone backup and having sort of restoring everything back on the new SSD. But after that, it was unbelievably fast. It was like having a brand new Mac. It's still going extremely fast. And it's, 8 years old now? And I would say it's going to be going well for another 5, maybe even longer years than that. So I didn't stop there. I had a couple of friends who had rather slow and old MacBook Pros, and replacing the spinning hard drive with an SSD in those using the same iFixit guides was simplicity in itself. I think it took me about 15 minutes to replace one of them, and again the same result. It was like a new Mac, just absolutely fast as anything. So all I would say to other Mac owners, if they've got old Macs with spinning hard drives, before you go out and spend loads of money on a new Mac, it is well worth considering updating. And if it's something that you don't feel able to do yourself, then maybe you could find someone who would do it at a reasonable price. It's still going to be a lot less than a new Mac. But it's been absolutely fabulous. So I just wanted to say, you know, that's something that people can do, and if they need to, don't be afraid to. So great. Anyway, thank you for an excellent show, and I shall keep listening. Thank you very much, and cheers for now.
Hey, Paul, thank you. I really appreciate the recommendation, and I couldn't agree more. I'm a convert to SSD upgrades from years ago. I had a listener actually talk me into it. I used to be all about RAM upgrades, and then was converted to the wonders of an SSD upgrade for an aging Mac. Again, we've talked about it here on the show. I totally agree with you. If someone doesn't feel comfortable enough to do it on their own, consider checking with a local independent Apple repair shop. Most towns still have them. If you don't, maybe you can find a friend or someone who's a little tech savvy who would be a little bit more comfortable doing it. The guides, you're right, at iFixit are really great. OWC also offers their own guides. MacSales.com is their website. And OWC, this is pretty cool. They actually sell DIY bundled kits. I'll have a link to one of them in the show notes at MacCast.com, or actually the kits for the 2012 to 2017 27-inch iMacs. But they have them for all models, and they basically give you everything that you need. You can get a kit that includes the SSD drive, the 3.5-inch adapter. One item that you mentioned in there that's really important, especially if you're doing an iMac upgrade, is the thermal sensor. You want to have that in there, because if you don't, or if you damage the one that's in the Mac currently, the fans will go crazy. You'll have, you know, fans running at full blast all the time. So you want that digital thermal sensor. And then they also give you all of the tools that you need, including some of the tools that you need to pry open the Mac. The 27-inch ones from 2012 on, I think, also all have a bit of tape that needs to be replaced. So they give you new double-sided tape that you have to put in there. If you're doing an older iMac, one of the ones that had the sort of separate glass from the display that you had to lift off, another important tip is you need to make sure that you really clean the inside of that glass well and try to avoid getting any kind of fingerprints or grease on the inside of that glass, because that'll really ruin the experience. Dust will stick to it, and you'll have kind of, you know, this weird look on your display. So that's a tricky part of that one. But I agree with you. Overall, Paul, it tends to not be as difficult as people might think. And especially with the guides, if you follow them step by step, you can usually do it. As always, there always is a risk that you might damage something in there. So be careful. Make sure you're using grounding straps and taking all the necessary precautions. Also, I would advise doing a backup first. Make sure you have multiple backups and that you verified those backups before you get in there and do anything. But, you know, if you have an aging Mac, you're absolutely right. You know, there might not be a lot to lose, and there could be a ton to gain, because it really does feel like having a brand new Mac. And you can probably save yourself a lot of money, maybe get a few more years of life out of your existing Mac, depending upon your applications. For you, Paul, it sounds like you might get another 5 years, which is absolutely incredible. And I don't plan on upgrading my Mac anytime soon, although I have a relatively more modern one with a 2015 MacBook Pro. But, you know, I think this is a great way to keep your Macs up and running, and, you know, well worth giving a shot. I couldn't agree more, Paul, and thank you for sending in your comment. Okay, finally, for the show for this week, I'm going to bring up a topic that we covered, I think, a long, long time ago on the MacCast. And it comes up every now and then. It has to do with shuffling and music. And I'll let Brian tell you about what he was experiencing.
Hey, this is Brian Deffinger from Cincinnati, Ohio. And just calling, got a question to see if anyone else is experiencing this. One of my favorite things about Apple Music. I really enjoy it, and I love Shuffle. It's one of my favorite features. At the same time, it gives me a great headache because I've got a great big music library, and I also add Apple Music, their music, to my library, and so I shuffle it, and it's awesome to just get surprised by, you know, a song I haven't heard in a while, or, you know, be surprised by a great song. But what happens is when I hit shuffle, I keep hearing the same songs over and over again. There'll be, you know, random songs interspersed in between, but then every time that I shuffle, I still hear this, a lot of the same songs. So wondering if anyone else has this problem, or if there's something that I can do to stop that from happening. All right, thanks. Bye-bye.
Hey, Brian, let me just start off in saying we are all experiencing that. And there's actually a reason for that. A couple reasons for that. I think one is, you know, I don't know if it's technically called information bias, but we all have biases, right, in terms of seeing patterns in things or recognizing patterns in things, either faces or even songs or audio. So, you know, it might feel sometimes like you're hearing the same song over and over again, and there may be actually more a longer period between hearing those songs than you really remember or you think. That is one thing that's possibly going on, but more likely what is going on is you're actually hearing the same songs come up over and over again. And the fact is that that is part of the randomness of shuffle, believe it or not. If shuffle is being truly random, then that is a situation that can and often does happen. So say you're shuffling 100 songs. Now, I'm assuming your library is probably much larger than that. It's probably thousands of songs, but it doesn't really matter when it comes to the, you know, the idea behind something being random. It is just as likely to say that song number, so if we take 100 songs, all right, look at song number 54 in the list. Now we're going to shuffle it, right? So they're organized 1 through 100. We've got song 54 sitting there in that list of 1 through 100. 54 could get shuffled into the first 10 tracks each time you start that shuffle for 100 times. It doesn't really matter. 54 could keep coming up. You know, it could come up in position 1 one time, and then position 5, and then position 8, and then position 10. And you could hit shuffle starting with that 100 songs numbered from 1 to 100 100 times, and it's entirely statistically possible, being purely random, that 54 comes up in the first tracks every single time you start that playlist. It's the definition of random. It's just as likely that it would never come up in the first 10 tracks or the first 20 tracks or however it might be. But all these things are possible. So the fact that that's happening and you're recognizing it, I think those two things are combining together to create that feeling. As you said, there's other songs that are coming up randomly or what feels like randomly, and that's what you're enjoying. So every time this subject comes up, I have to remind people that, you know, this is the definition of random, this is the definition of shuffle. Now, what a lot of people actually really want is for Apple to create a shuffling algorithm or a shuffling software that is not random, one that is actually biased to prefer songs that you have either less frequently played or played less recently, and then weight those songs higher when it's building the shuffling algorithm so that those songs get pushed to the forefront or the front of that playlist, and you're more likely to hear them than other songs that maybe you've already heard recently or been played, or songs that have been played frequently. So it's sort of a tweaking of the shuffling random algorithm to make it truly not random, to make it more deliberate. And it's certainly something that Apple could do. I think they actually did it at one point with the iPod Shuffle. I seem to remember the Shuffle having a mode, I think they called it like Smart Shuffle, and there was like a slider that you could kind of control the randomness of the shuffle. So you could kind of have it be more random or less random. Maybe that's a feature Apple needs to bring back to their shuffling, because this does come up a lot. You're not the first person to ask about this. And about the best suggestion that I have for you currently that I can think of is you can sort of weight the algorithm or the shuffling yourself and get to this by building a smart playlist as your kind of starting shuffle point. So if you set up a smart playlist and it has the settings where you can tell it, hey, give me 100 songs or 200 songs or 1,000 songs, and when you give me those songs, give me the least recently played songs that you have. So you sort of pre-seed your list with songs that you haven't played recently, and then shuffle those, and then you're more likely to hear songs that you haven't heard in a while. So that's one way you could probably handle it. I'm sure there's probably some others. Maybe some people in the community have some recommendations. So if you do, send me an email, an audio comment to maccast@gmail.com, and we will try to help Brian out. I'm sure we also, I know, have some math people out there. I'm looking at you, Dan, who can probably talk a little bit more about randomness and random numbers and the randomness of shuffle. Hopefully I described it correctly. I don't think I got it wrong, but I always often do when it comes to math type things. So feel free to correct me, send in an audio comment. And Dan may have even corrected me the last time we talked about this, which was years ago, but there you go. That's probably what's going on. And that might be something you can do to kind of manage it, Brian. Let me know how that works out for you. But with that, hey, that's going to do it for this episode of the MacCast. Thanks for hanging out with me talking about Worldwide Developer Conference. Before I leave you, I do want to thank a show sponsor, Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, also Text Expander for iPhone and iPad, PDF Pen for iOS, and PDF Pen Scan Plus. You can get more information and details on all of their great software by visiting smilesoftware.com/podcast. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at cachefly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. They are at backbeatmedia.com. As always, I love hearing from you. If you have a comment, a question, something you'd like to hear covered on a future episode of the MacCast, you can send your emails and audio comments to maccast@gmail.com. You're also welcome to call in on the listener hotline and leave a voicemail. That phone number, 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9. If you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you'll find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And if you'd like to follow me on social media, you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast, or you can check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast. But that will do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.